Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
Hey everybody, I'm Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, worldwide leader in sports, entertainment, and The Mandalorian by proxy.
I'm Ryan Lambert from The Lincoln Project.
I'm Sean McIndoe from Canada.
And you're in Puck Soup. Hey, Ryan, congratulations then on all your funding.
Hey,
I think that's awesome.
We got -3% of Republicans to vote against Trump, just like we wanted. And
right?
Now we're all multi millionaires. So it went great for us.
You did. I mean, like, listen, I don't think that you're really doing yourself a service. You also got some real sick burns in on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Greg, I don't know if you've heard. Orange Man, bad.
What a grift. But hey, it's a chance for guys like Michael Steele to create their own wing of the Republican Party. So it's good times. This is not a politics podcast, by the way. As we do the podcast, we don't know anything. So it's just going to be about hockey and shit.
I mean, that was true the day we started. We didn't know shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's unimpeachably true. Unimpeachably. Sorry, it's not a politics podcast. Ryan, I wanted to ask you a question because this news did break before we started to do the podcast. Electronic Arts, the National Hockey League, and the National Hockey League Players Association announced a multi-year renewal to their partnership to keep the NHL series on EA Sports going for a few more years. Your thoughts on the continuation of this partnership based on what you've seen from the current product?
I mean, who else is going to make an NHL game, right? Like, that's... There's only one guy willing to do the job in town, so have at it, I guess. You know, I have to say, after some initial difficulties with the product, I've enjoyed it a fair bit more since figuring out some of the issues that were contributing to my being insanely pissed off about the NHL 21 launch. So. Yeah.
What if we gave the contract to Innersloth, the maker of Among Us?
And, I still haven't played Among Us.
The NHL games just become a game in which we all try to guess which player murdered someone. Because that'd be kind of fun.
I haven't.
Personally.
I haven't played that game. I don't know. I've seen people play it. I don't know anything about it, though.
It's a fun game.
Sure, why not?
Sean, is there any other video game manufacturer you would like to have seen get the NHL contract?
No, I would have liked to have seen it in a perfect world go back to how it used to be, where they would make that deal with multiple companies and they would compete and try to make the best games. But realistically, that stopped many years ago, as we talked about on one of the Patreon podcasts, where the EA just dumped a big bag of money on them. And if you're the NHL these days, bring on the big bag of money. I can't argue with them taking any sort of deal to boost the bottom line right now. So I'm and there was no reason to expect anything other than this. So let's roll with it.
But your point is taken, though. Like, the WWE is better when there's competition, competition.
Like we talked about in the show where we were talking about hockey video games. Like, back in the early 90s, there were like five different games that all had NHL licenses and you could play as your favorite players, and they had different approaches and they tried different things, and the EA games were way better, so they won. But even in, you know, when it was the 2K series or whatever, like there were some neat things that both companies did. It would be cool to go back to that, but again, big giant bag of money. It's not really hard to crack this mystery.
Mm-hmm. Give the NHL series to the makers of Breath of the Wild, and then you have to go on epic quests to like
find
the puck.
Was it Nintendo America? Is that you want?
Well, I mean, it is Nintendo America, but I wanted to go to the people who actually made the game. You know, the director and the writers and the artists.
Sure.
And if you know my history on this show of trying to pronounce names as I look in this Wikipedia, I'm not going to attempt it. So I'm just going to say the makers of Breath of the Wild. Okay. It's too early.
Shigeru Miyamoto? Is that who you...
Sure.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
He's great.
Wouldn't you like to see Mika Zibanejad on a hang glider? On an epic quest?
Hey, why not?
At some point during the game?
You gotta do something. No hockey these days, so...
Wouldn't you like to see Brad Marchand fight a mechanical guardian? Hand-to-hand combat?
Greg, they already tried that Guardians would. Thing in the NHL.
I don't mean having him fight the Maple Leaf and watch out for those sap bombs. Where does that rank in the worst ideas in NHL history? I know this is probably a bonus episode, but like just without listing the rest of them. Is the Guardian Project top five?
Now, here's the thing, though. Like, worst ideas, let's do some cool comic book thing wasn't a terrible idea. Worst executions.
Worst receptions
is probably more. Like, I actually, every time people roast the NHL over the Guardian thing, which they should, but I always cringe a little bit because I'm like, it's the one time they went out of their comfort zone and tried to do something a little bit cool, and it sucked. And
bring in a new audience, potentially.
Yeah. It's like the nerdy kid tried to wear the cool clothes one time, got on the bus, the popular kid was like, you look like garbage. And they're like, well, that's it. I'm back to just, I don't know. I might be projecting on that one. But
no, I mean, that happened when I tried to dress like a skater in middle school. Before moving to San Jose and dressing like a skater again, where all I do is wear hoodies and shorts all the time and Skechers. No, I think that it's a very good point that you make, which is that there is a difference between a bad idea and bad execution. Bad idea going back to Atlanta, right? Bad execution, the Guardian Project. That makes sense. I like that. Where does the Buffalo Slug jersey fall in that?
There have been so many terrible,
that's
terrible
a bad idea.
Uniforms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah. Those mid-90s uniforms are still, I think, the all-timer for terrible.
Well, there are some that are, like, great, though. Like, for example, right? The Coyotes Kachina jersey. I don't remember, like, I wasn't a big NHL fan around the time they were announced. I'm sure people were like, whatever, those are fine. But now you look at them and you're like, those are fucking cool because they're so not what most hockey jerseys are, you know?
Yeah.
I liked
the playing card one for the Kings. But again, then you get into the neighborhood of, like, is it a good jersey in comparison to the jerseys they already had, which of course it isn't,
you know, right,
even
yeah.
going back to the 80s.
Right. I mean, what the Kings should do is go back to the purple and gold. We have enough black and white jerseys in the league. We don't need more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, this is my longstanding thing about the Kings. And obviously, like, the Ducks uniforms are horrible, just awful. So.
As we ease into current hockey talk, I do want to mention that COVID-19 very much does still exist, although Tony D'Angelo's Twitter account doesn't. I don't know if those two things are associated or not.
Yeah, it's a shame. That was the same guy who was tweeting a few months ago, right, that the difference between him and the libs is that if his guy lost, he wouldn't freak out and have a meltdown on Twitter.
Well, a lot of people said that.
Now, listen.
But he specifically said it, and then two days after the election, he's
Look, Tony D'Angelo flailing desperately to stop a result that was already apparent to everybody – I just can't see that happening, you know, even once, let alone twice in a few months.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. The politics thing being what it is, because as you know, this isn't a politics podcast. Motherfucker said, you know, what happened to COVID in the last 48 hours? To which everybody said, oh, we broke records for infections in the last 48 hours.
Yeah. And 2,000 people died.
Yeah. That's, and so
there's your update.
You could, you know, Tony D'Angelo is a Philly, you know, old school, you know, red pocket district Philly guy. And that's fine. Like, it's whatever. Your politics or whatever. It's ingrained in you by your parents, probably, and your own predilections. But if you play in New York City, and New York City is staggered by this pandemic, and 25,000 people in New York City alone have died from this pandemic, and you're going to sit there and fucking tweet, oh, what happened to COVID in the last 48 hours because the news channels happen to be covering the most important election in a lifetime instead of the disease. Like, come the fuck on. And I hope that it was the Rangers that stepped in and ended this shit. Because, like, they handed him a new contract. They have in the past talked to him about this shit. And then, of course, for like 48 hours, he pops off until we get to the point of COVID-19's a hoax, which is basically the subtext of that tweet. So yeah, now he's gone, and probably for the best, maybe just probably for the moment, but probably for the best. But, you know, for the 10 people that listen to his podcast, congratulations, it's probably good content for this week. He could do the persecution complex thing.
Yep.
But I was like, I mean, listen, you could tweet out whatever the fuck you want about the election, but just like, I don't have time for COVID truthers. Do not have time. Never have had time on this podcast for COVID truthers. And no longer have to have time for Tony D'Angelo as he flies off into, you know, some cheesesteak shop. But speaking of COVID, so I don't know. I admittedly did not listen to you guys last week because I only like the sound of my own voice. How much did you get into what might happen next season?
A little bit, I think.
I think we more talked about it through the lens of some of the stuff that was happening in the NFL, what Major League Baseball had gone through, that sort of thing. We didn't get into the nitty gritty of the logistics and
what might next season look like, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. So if we take the back of the napkin idea that they're working with, which is to try to open in four different hubs, one of them in Canada because of the border issue, all Canadian division. How are we feeling about that? Well, I'll start with you, Sean.
There's a lot of excitement up here about that.
Right.
I think when it first got floated, a lot of people went, we're Canadian hockey fans, right? Like, you give us something that's different, and our first thought is, oh, that's different. That's not the way it's normally done. But I think more and more, like, people are kind of looking around going like, man, that would be – first of all, it would be a fun division. Like, there's no clear-cut favorite. There's no – other than probably Ottawa, there's no clear-cut bad team. It's going to be maybe six teams fighting it out for four playoff spots. And then you get two rounds of all-Canadian playoffs, which is – I wrote about earlier in the week. It's been a long time since we've had a lot of Canadian matchups. I think there's been two in the entire cap era. We haven't had three in a season, which is what we get in – 30 plus years. We used to get them all the time because of the Smythe division, but not anymore. I mean, that'd be fun as hell. Like, you know, like, Winnipeg has never played Toronto in the playoffs. Like, how cool would that be? How cool would it be to see Montreal play Vancouver, let alone Edmonton, Calgary, which we haven't seen since 91, Toronto, Montreal, which we haven't seen since the 70s. Like, there's all these great matchups that could come in. It could be a hell of a lot of fun. Like, I think we're all kind of talking ourselves into it. Not because of the logistics or how you're going to work. Like, it's just like, that would be fun, especially to do it as knowing it's a one-off. This is a one-time thing, man. Like,
right.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but like, hasn't there been in the past a small portion of the Canadian punditry that wanted an all-Canadian division at some point, through realignment?
Every once in a while, whenever there was a realignment talk, somebody would throw that out there. But I don't think it was ever seriously consider just the time zones. I mean, you can't put Vancouver in a division with three Eastern time zone teams, and unless you're going to really mess with the scheduling.
Right.
So I don't, you know, it wouldn't work, and it's good. That's going to be a challenge this year, but this year's going to be so weird anyways. Like, have Vancouver fly out to Montreal and play Montreal three times, and then go to Toronto and play them three times, and then play out, like, do it baseball style. So what? Like, nothing's going to be normal anyways. You might as well get crazy. And then they go home and they stay there for a month.
What's your take on Canadian Division plus three in the U.S. there, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just because, you know, like, it's the most rabid hockey markets, generally speaking, all playing each other eight times a year for the whole season or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's... I think the real problem is that, boy, a lot of those Canadian teams just are mediocre, you know? And so, like, I wonder, you know, like, I disagree with Sean. I think there is a clear-cut best team in Canada, and it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. And maybe he's just not saying that to not jinx himself or whatever, but I really feel like it would be like the Maple Leafs, especially if you get them out of a division with Boston and Tampa, where they're not going to win many of those games, you would think. You know, like, oh, we're supposed to think, like, oh, Montreal super improved or whatever. Well, they had, like, what, three more regulation wins than Ottawa, maybe less than that last year. Mm-hmm. So, okay, what is Montreal?
That's pre-Josh Anderson, though.
That's true. He's gonna figure it all out.
This is how I mark time, you know?
Yeah.
BJ and AJ before... maybe not BJ. Okay, continue.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, Calgary certainly improved this summer. I think, you know, their biggest problems were in net, and now maybe that's not their biggest problem anymore now that they have a goalie. Who has been good for the last few years. But Vancouver mm-hmm. took a pretty big step back, I think, just in losing all the guys they lost and not really replacing them. And Edmonton, I think they've improved, but not to the point where you're like, oh, I'm very confident that Edmonton is going to be a good team next year. Because why would you be confident in that? So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting division just because everybody's kind of – bad in their own way, except for Toronto, where, you know, I guess you can say they have problems that you would point to, but you're not like, and those are all like fatal flaws for them. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, for a guy who hates Canada, you know a lot about Canadian teams, Ryan.
Yeah, it's almost like it's my freaking job, Greg.
Oh, right. That's a good point. So two things here. First of all, we've all known for years that the NHL is only good at marketing one thing. They've attempted to market a lot of things. They're only really good at marketing one thing, and that's rivalries, right?
Yep.
And so this becomes the distillation of that. I mean, you can get Edmonton versus Calgary twice a week if you wanted to. Like, it's going to be crazy how many sexy rivalry matchups they're going to be able to get. So that's one. I am intrigued, and I've talked to a couple people behind the scenes on this. I am intrigued what NBC does with an all-Canadian division. They have not shown an appetite for showing a lot of those games. I do think that they would have an appetite for, like, Edmonton and Toronto because they could sell Connor versus
McDavid
Austin.
McDavid and Matthews, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They probably can figure their way around marketing Vancouver as the Elias Pettersson Quinn Hughes team after the playoffs. Like, there's some juice there. But, I mean, how many times are they showing Montreal? How many times are they showing Calgary? Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they would handle those teams and those players. Now, the American part of this is fascinating only because of, like, if they end up doing this, where they could do it. You know, the common perception is that it's going to be some of the cities they looked at during the bubble search. So your Columbuses and your Dallases and your Las Vegases and such. I don't think they're going to be slavish to time zones. I think they're just going to go where they can pull it off. And pulling it off is going to be a real trick. We wrote about this on Monday on ESPN. Doing it last time was easier because hotels were shut down. Like, they literally reopened the hotel in Edmonton to do the bubble there. That's not so much the case now. Like, hotels have been open. You know, bookings have happened. The, you know, wedding blocks have been booked and shit. You know,
like, and they've all gone great.
And they right. But, like, you know, it's not as if you can just take over a hotel for an indiscriminate amount of months with the ease that you did in Edmonton. So that's one challenge. Like to throw out an example. One of the easiest setups you could possibly find is the one in Los Angeles, where the JW Marriott, and it is a big fucking Marriott, is right across the quad from Staples Center. You can just walk to the game. But that's, you know, hotel's been open, and who knows what the bookings look like when you get into, like, March and April of next year. So that's going to be an interesting thing. But on top of that, like, the real intrigue for me, and I wrote about this on Thursday on my column, the real intrigue for me is that they're not going to do the same bubble. It's not going to be an airtight bubble. Like, they know the players aren't going to do that again, so they're going to let them leave for, like, to go back home for, like, a week and then go back to the bubble. And while there is going to be testing when you get back into the bubble, and there may be even testing while you're back home, a lot of this is just going to be on faith. The same faith that people had in phase three when we had the training camps, and while you're at your facility, you're under lock and key. When you're back home, please don't go to a bar. And so how confident are we that the same results could repeat themselves now that we saw when everybody was on their best behavior in June?
I don't know if you could do it for months on end. I think that's the big challenge is, like,
right.
You can do it maybe for a month or two at a time, but, like, if you're going, well, we need you to, you know, kind of color between the lines for us for the next 6 months. Okay. Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the one thing that they may have going for them is they can learn some lessons from the other sports. And, you know, we saw what happened with baseball. Baseball started and it was a disaster. People were getting sick left and right. Teams were shutting down for a week, 2 weeks at a time. You had giant gaps in the standings, and, you know, they could make that up because of the nature of baseball. You can play doubleheaders and stuff like that, but it was a total mess. And lots of people were like, this isn't going to work. Baseball is not going to get to the finish line. And then they clamped it down, and the players got more serious about it. The teams got more serious, and they made it all the way to the end, and then had a guy test positive in game 6 of the World Series, which, if the right team hadn't won that game, might have meant that you can't play game 7. Like, I mean, they narrowly avoided disaster. Now, you look at the NFL, similar sort of thing. You know, it feels like every week some team is shutting down, either because they have a positive test or because there's a close contact, or maybe it's a coach or somebody who works there. And so far, the NFL, it's been wobbly, but they've been able to get all the games in. Looks like they're on decent track to finish the season, despite some near misses and some scares and some people being irresponsible.
Right.
But the NFL is so different than the NHL. Like, we talked about this before, right? The NHL, the NFL, you got one game a week, and it's probably on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And if you can't play that game, if you need to push it back to Tuesday, okay, that's your one game of the week. The NHL, you might be playing, especially this year, you might be playing 4 games a week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if somebody in the NFL tests positive on Monday, or doesn't even test positive, let's say they have a close contact who tests positive, you got to shut them down for 3 days or 5 days or whatever, they can still play in the next game. The NHL, you're going to have guys missing time all over the place. It's going to be, like, I don't feel like we have our heads around enough how big of a mess this could potentially be. And the good news is the NHL can just point to all those things I just mentioned and say to the players, like, we need you to take this serious, or else this is where we're going to wind up too. But I still think it's going to be incredibly difficult to get anything that looks like a full season in, and certainly it's going to be impossible to get anything that meets the expectations that are maybe set by what we saw in the summer, where they had a bubble and everything seemed to go perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is. It definitely feels like there's going to be a situation where one guy fucks it up for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, for real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
One guy's going to go, you know, whatever. During the NBA bubble, like, a guy had a girl up to his room or whatever, a girl who worked in the bubble, and they just fucking kicked him out of the bubble. They were like, that's it. Goodbye.
Yeah. He didn't even try to make it awesome like in the NFL where that one guy in the Seahawks dressed up his girl like a player, which I thought was
Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, it definitely creates a situation where someone's going to do something dumb because, you know, you're dealing with 700 guys or whatever the number ends up being because we don't know how they're going to do, like...
the AHL stuff.
The AHL or any of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, you're adding – let's say it's just 700 guys. You don't think one of those 700 guys is going to do something fucking dumb in the next 6 months?
And it doesn't even have to be like, oh, yeah, he went out to a crowded club. Or it could be like, yeah, I went to my brother's house because it was his birthday.
Yep.
My brother's wife tested positive. Now I'm a close contact and I have to – quarantine for 5 days, and oh, by the way, I'm my team's leading scorer and we've got 3 games in that time, and before I knew this I went to practice, and so now, you know, all my teammates in theory are
right
there's so many different ways it could be.
Like, let's say you're like a young defenseman and you happen to be part of a massive crowd protesting the counting of votes in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Like, let's just say that happened
theoretically,
like, that could be it too, right?
Yeah.
One of the really interesting dynamics to this that we touched on in the ESPN piece was the idea that not every team is cool with this notion off the hop. There are obviously some owners that are like, let's not play. Like, I you know, if we can't have fans in the building, we're gonna lose a shit ton of money. We don't know when they're coming back. Let's just wait until we can do this for real. Like, there are some owners that kind of feel that way. They're not going to really have enough sway to, you know, change the trajectory of the NHL playing this season. And they certainly aren't going to do opt-outs. I think the NHL, reading between the lines, is very much like, well, it's either all 31 teams or it's none of us. But the really interesting dynamic that I kind of came across were that there are teams that are like, you know, all due respect to the San Jose Sharks and whomever who can't have mass gatherings in their arenas, like, we can. Like, if you're the Dallas Stars and you see what the Cowboys are doing right now with capacity, and you just watched your team go through a full playoff run without getting a single dime of ticket revenue, like, wouldn't you be like, why the fuck do we have to go to a hub? If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning and you're seeing the Bucks and their crowds, why do we have to go to a hub? Like, there are a lot of places in the country, as of right now, that could have fans in the arena in some way and sort of ease open the revenue spigot again.
So why, like, not have the hub in the place where you can have fans?
That's a good question. That's a great point. I don't know. I don't know if we approach this thing as a no capacity or a limited capacity thing. Now, maybe they should go limited capacity. And then you just kind of sell tickets to whoever – you know, can go, like, fans in that city or fans that want to visit. Who knows? But, like, there are definitely places right now that are looking at their brethren in the NFL, and they're looking at, you know, concerts and tours being booked for March and April in arenas, and they're just like, what is the sense of me not being able to take advantage of the easing of restrictions, rightly or wrongly? So I don't know. That's an interesting part of this equation.
I love that. Just to highlight what a fucking minor league the NHL is, multiple teams are apparently like, well, what if we just don't play?
Right.
Like, well, what if we, the Arizona Coyotes, just don't have a 2021 season?
Well, we've seen it in other leagues where, like,
the SPHL.
The SPHL, the ECHL, the AHL might not have some teams come back. Like, you know, there's some precedent for
it. And what are those? Those are what did I just say? Minor leagues. Yes, of course.
Well, minor hockey leagues, no less. Now you've got the intrigue. Like, how does that dynamic work? If you're a fan of like, I don't know, like an Avalanche fan, and your hub is in Dallas, do you travel to Dallas to go watch the Avs? You probably do. If you miss the team that much,
I mean, what kind of a person is that guy? I don't know.
You know who that guy is, Ryan.
He's
got his Forsberg jersey. He just wants to scream shoot on the power play.
Yeah, that guy definitely has a couple of team logo tattoos if he's traveling and to go watch his hockey team play a road game.
He's like, you see this empty soda cup? It's a commemorative cup. Uwe Krupp once autographed it for me, and I keep it in this box on my mantle. That guy. That's the guy going to Dallas, packing his things and going to Dallas. And if he's packing his things, let's hope that it's in an away suitcase. You know, away C-plus. Creates some
was,
of the.
It was okay.
Sean knows. Sean understands. Away is my favorite maker of suitcases. I have had many suitcases in my life. I've traveled. I've seen a million faces, and I've rocked them all. Away is by far the greatest bag I've ever owned. We own several of them, of varying shapes and sizes and colors. They are designed to change the way that you see the world. They're the perfect suitcase, in my opinion. And here's why. Durable as all heck. Built so you can fit in any number of your items. Again, I have done a thing where I have taken a medium-sized Away bag on the road with me for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it's carry-on. Like, I've never checked a bag during the Stanley Cup playoffs because all my shit fits inside the Away bag. And I know it's going to be safe and sound in there. Durable exteriors that can withstand even the roughest of baggage handlers if you do check your bag. Every suitcase comes with an interior organizational system that includes a built-in compression pad to help you pack more in. And a hidden laundry bag that separates your dirty clothes. Also very good when you're on the road for like 2 months. TSA-approved combination lock keeps your stuff safe. 4 spinner wheels makes you fly through the airport with the greatest of ease. You can add on things like, you know, personal chargers and all kinds of stuff. And it's just great stuff. There's a 100-day trial on everything that Away makes. Not only the suitcases, but all the other stuff they make. You can take the product out on the road, live with it, travel with it, even get lost with it for 100 days. If you decide it's not for you, you can return any non-personalized item. So like a suitcase that has Lambert carved into the handle, Ryan, you can't give that one back. But you can give back anything else. Away offers free shipping and returns on any order within the contiguous US, Europe, Canada, Sean, and Australia. Start your 100-day trial and shop the entire Away lineup of travel essentials, including their best-selling suitcases at awaytravel.com/puck. That's awaytravel.com/puck. Can't recommend this product enough to you. I use it, and I give it the hearty Greg Wyshynski endorsement. Away bags. awaytravel.com/puck. All right, so maybe you could also take your Away bag to an outdoor game. And by that, I mean they're probably still looking to do the Stadium Series game in Raleigh. But more importantly, maybe you can sneak in and see a game at a giant frozen lake somewhere in North America. Because although Lake Louise didn't work out, it turns out, boys, that the national parks in Canada frown upon massive amounts of infrastructure being built on its land to facilitate a hockey game. Yeah, it's weird. Even though that probably isn't going to happen, there are probably other options. What say you about a Mystery Alaska-esque beginning to the season where the boys are on the pond and they're skating around and passing around the old biscuit and mom's got the hot cocoa ready for them after they're done?
I think it fucking rocks. I think that's such a good idea.
Yeah, it'd be fun as hell if they can make it work.
I think it's going to be really cool if they pick the right spot. Percentage chance that the teams that play in this game eventually, when they miss the playoffs by a point, blame this game.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we got frostbite. It was...
Right.
It wasn't good, so...
Yeah, we didn't see the Leafs out there on that frozen lake battling the elements.
Yeah, I think guess that really is cool the big idea. Concern is that, like, Brad Marchand falls through the ice. And
is that a big concern?
And it's like that scene in Skyfall where he has to figure out where the hole in the ice was, and then he finally fires a flare into it or some shit.
Yeah.
There, I gotta tell, like, I've done the Frozen Lake thing back when I'm old enough where, you know, I was a child before global warming ruined winter. And that used to scare the shit out of me, was the falling through the ice. And then, like, in movies, you'd see, like, somebody banging on the ice from under the ice.
Yeah.
You know, to try to get out. Like, that's got to be top five scariest things that I can consider.
Never even occurred to me when I would play on a pond growing
really?
Up. Yeah, never even entered my mind.
Wow.
Yeah, just a dumb kid, that's all. But
I think I've told this, I mentioned this in the podcast before, but I once bonded with James Van Riemsdyk because he grew up in Middletown, New Jersey, which was one town next to me. In Central NJ, and we both had the same experience growing up, which was that before you went on the ice, you had to find like the biggest cinder block you could find.
And then
just throw it on the pond to see if the ice was solid. Because in Jersey, it's clearly not Minnesota. Like, you know, it's not like there's a certain point in the winter where you just could, you know, drive a truck on the lake. Like, it was always sort of specious. And so you did some several attempts of testing the strength of the ice before you went out on it. But yeah, that used to scare the shit out of me. The, like, falling under the ice and then not knowing how to get back through it.
Yeah, I guess I was just braver than you.
I mean, that's probably part of it. But, you know, I think it's a cool idea. I've also – I was talking to somebody the other day. They brought up an idea that I can't remember if the NBA did it or if they talked about doing it, but a game on an aircraft carrier?
I believe they did that for college basketball.
College basketball, okay. But that was also an idea that had been bandied about for the NHL at some point, in which case you would really like to see the barn fight between Vinnie Viola and Bill Foley as to who gets to be in the We Love the Military game on an aircraft carrier.
Finally, the NHL, more deeply intertwined with the American military. Can't wait.
But it would be a real cool fucking spot. Like, the not having to have fans there thing opens up a million different avenues. I don't think they're going to do it in Central Park or the National Mall, which are two of my favorite off-the-board ideas for, like, a winter classic, just because it's going to be impossible to keep fans away. But if you're doing it in remote locations, like, any number of places are going to be open to you, and that's going to be really fun. I'm excited about it. And I think they're going to do it, too, to try to get as much attention on the season as possible. Anything else to say about the potential 2020-21 season? I mean, the league says they haven't talked to players about prorating their salaries yet.
That's going to be
that'll be an interesting
That's going to be a mess. That's going to be a real mess because there's in
they already took a pay cut.
They took a pay cut, and in the memorandum of understanding, there that seemed to be addressed to say that they wouldn't be asked to reduce salary for this coming season. But now there's some talk that maybe the wording was a little more specific than it appeared on first read, and it doesn't necessarily rule out the league as a whole doing that. But it's going to be a mess. And, you know, this is Gary Bettman can talk all he wants about wanting to be partners with the players. But when you make absolutely everything a fight for 20 years and then you suddenly come back to the table and say, hey, guys, we need you all to take a big pay cut this year so we can have a season. I'm interested to see what the response
to
that is.
Sell, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that's I mean, to tie a bow around it, that's kind of the thing that you're hearing from a lot of different people on from the player side and from the owner side is that this negotiation is so night and day from what we saw in the lead up to the bubbles, because one, although it's going to have some labor issues tied to it, it's not tied to a new CBA, and then two, everybody was just kind of laser focused on the same objective, which was let's finish the season. Let's finish what we started, basically, and do it in the safest way. And players were willing to take concessions and you know, live in a bubble and do all that shit just to get it done. And it certainly isn't going to play out that way now, and especially at a time when you're not restricted from doing a lot of other things like you were in the summer. Like, you couldn't go play in an arena, you know, necessarily anywhere in the country during the summer because of COVID and everything else. And now there's a lot more avenues to do that if you're these teams and these players. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. And the clock's fucking ticking. I mean, it seems like the NBA has really put the pedal down to try to get their season
started
around Christmas time.
The NBA's going third week in December, according to everything we've seen. So maybe that's good for the NHL. Maybe it, A, moves them along, but B, also gives them another league to sort of, you know what, you guys go out there first, and we'll kind of watch you for a few weeks and see what works and what doesn't and what mistakes you guys make, and you can use that to affect our thinking. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, smart money's middle of January, maybe around All-Star time for the NHL, but teams still believe it could be as late as February. They've been saying that since September. I saw our old friend Steve Simmons, you know, act like that was new news, new information, but it's something the teams have been talking about since September. All right. Dom from The Athletic. Anybody want to fill in the blank on the last name?
Lecision.
Sure.
Just like Curtis.
Lecision.
God damn it. That's it. It's just like Curtis's last name.
Is it Lecision?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
This seems like there's a lot more Z's in there than it would just be Lecision.
Well, look, right. Eastern European languages. I don't know.
Don from The Athletic had the top 10 worst contracts in the NHL through his usual analytic wizardry. The honorable mentions are Erik Karlsson, Brady Shea, Kevin Hayes, Logan Couture, and Tyler Myers. So those are the honorable mentions. So you can only imagine who made the top 10. I'm going to take you through it real quick. Number 10, Josh Morrissey, $6.25 million over 8 years. That's the AAV. It doesn't seem like that's a bad contract or a bad player to give that contract to, especially considering what spot they were in when, like Trouba, you know, knowing what Trouba's situation was going to be. But I don't know.
Well, right, the thinking at the time was, well, he and Trouba are great together, and then Trouba left, which I assume knew was coming.
They had to know it was coming.
And,
yeah.
And I mean, everybody else did, so why wouldn't they? But then they were like, well, we got to lock down one of these two guys. And it's got to be Josh Morrissey, so we might as well pay him whatever he wants. And then it was like, oh, maybe a lot of his success was dependent on playing with Jacob Trouba. And
so this is like if the Capitals let John Carlson go but re-signed Carl Alsner kind of deal?
Yes. They through no fault of their own, they might have just chosen the wrong guy to hitch their wagon to for that kind of cash. So
number 9 is Mike Matheson, a huge coup for Jim Rutherford. Real good pickup there. 4.875 million AAV over 6 years. I mean, I don't think anyone's really going to have any issue with him being on this list. Justin Falk this is why I like Dom's list, because it makes you really think about some people you don't consider. But yeah, Justin Falk, $6.5 million over 7 years.
Terrible contract.
And on a team whose blue line has shifted and changed and morphed pretty significantly since then.
Let's put it this way. They effectively chose Justin Falk over Alex Petrangelo.
One would assume that to be the case. I was in St. Louis when they made the Falk deal, and everybody was like, this is the insurance policy, but it turned out to be the replacement policy, I think, actually. Yep.
And keep in mind, with that deal, hasn't even technically started yet. Or, I mean, I guess it has because of the new league year, but he hasn't played a game under that deal. They acquired him in a trade. He had 1 year left on his deal. Rather than risk, you know, maybe waiting and seeing how it worked out, see how the Petrangelo talks went, they did the shiny new toy thing where we trade it for him, we got to keep him. And 7-year deal that starts now.
Jacob Trouba, number 7, $8 million AAV times 6 years. I don't know about this one. Like, I understand the AAV is high. I really don't know if you can judge him based on his first year in New York, because New York was an atrocious defensive team last year.
Yeah, I wonder, did anybody play for that team defensively? That maybe had a big contract and had just signed out of Winnipeg. I'm trying to think who could have played a role in that being bad. Well, we'll never get to the bottom of it.
Not a Jacob Trouba guy.
I think he's good, but like, if you're going to go, well, you can't base it on the 1 year of that contract. Why not? That's what I don't get is like, they were a bad defensive team, and he was one of the reasons they were a bad defensive team. I don't think it's fucking out of bounds to say that if he keeps playing like that, that is an awful contract.
Now, where I do think that Dom makes a good point is that the acquisition of Trouba at the time was very much like, he's going to be our power play quarterback, and that job has certainly gone to someone else during his time in New York. It's gone to Tony DeAngelo. While they've both been there. So if you signed Trouba to that deal thinking, okay, this guy is going to run our power play.
He's going to put up a million points. Yeah,
yeah, he's going to be our de facto Chris Letang, you know, just passing the puck to fucking Panarin. And that doesn't happen. It does certainly kind of transform your view of that contract a little bit. So
we should be clear on what Dom is doing here. He's putting the numbers into the model, and the model is giving his answers. This isn't the sort of piece that I would write, where I would just sit down and with my own opinions and just pull stuff out of the air and be like, here's my list, and then you could be like, well, you're dumb, that's a bad list, and you'd probably be right. In his case, it's, you know, he's looking at how many years are left on the deal, how much is it worth, how much should the player produce based on that, and how much do they project. And the model doesn't care that the Rangers used Tony DeAngelo instead of Jake Trouba, but he did this in Winnipeg. The model looks at it and goes, this guy was not very good last year. He's got 8 years left. And if he's not significantly better, that's going to be a bad contract, which I think is, yep. I think is fair. You know, and there's always context. There's always other things that we know about that a spreadsheet isn't going to know. But at the same time, sometimes we put too much stock in that and we let teams off the hook for bad decisions when just the numbers tell you that it was a mistake.
Yeah, and the other thing to say, too, is especially with Jacob Trouba, when he signed that deal, I think a lot of people's reaction was, that's more than I thought it was going to be, but yeah. Okay. You know, it didn't feel like a terrible
deal at the time.
No, for sure. But I think what is interesting is that, like, it's not taking into account, well, the open market and blah, blah, blah. Like, someone else would have given him that contract. Because, like, yeah, maybe that's true, but, like, you're the team that did, you know? And the other thing I think that you need to say with Trouba going to New York is he was only going to go to New York, so they shouldn't have had to also overpay him.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fucking Panarin thing where it's like, oh, he just wanted to play for the Rangers and that's it.
Be honest with me. If I created a persona like Dom, and I just invented a methodology and just like faked numbers, could I pull? Do you think I could get away with that?
No.
Do you think I could pull a fast one?
Absolutely.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think if we believed John Chayka's numbers without ever seeing him prove the work, that I couldn't just like?
Who believed John Chayka's numbers? What are you talking about?
You don't think I could take 10 obvious bad contracts and just be like, the contract virtuoso ratio for this one is 2.3. And people would be like, well, he's got it there. This is a bad contract.
Yeah, well, people would like that. The reason it works for Dom is that Dom has years and years of really strong evidence to back up, like, oh, you know, he's continually worked to refine this model, and
right.
it's typically the most accurate when it comes to like projecting the outcomes of games and player production and player value, so and that sort of thing.
What I need then is I need it to be like the Eddie Murphy classic, The Distinguished Gentleman, where he just happens to have the same name as someone else and then gets elected to Congress. So what I need is to buy the domain War on Ice and then just like – or buy Corsica and then just like put my bullshit on there. And then there will be enough marketplace confusion where I might be able to pull this off. Keep in mind, I am not making a value judgment on Dom. Dom's one of my favorite writers in the fucking planet. I think he does incredible work. I'm not saying he's a phony. I'm asking if I could be a phony and do this.
Greg, I don't think you're smart enough to pull off the – like, and I'm not even saying that as an insult. Like, I'm fucking not smart enough to pull that shit off.
It is a well, first of all, I am smart enough to pull a scam. Let's be honest.
No, but not that scam.
Right, but I'm not smart enough to do a math scam is what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
You're right, okay. No, I will accept that. I will accept the fact that I could not do a math scam. I could do a scam. I could do like an Ocean's heist maybe, but not like a fake analytics site putting value judgments on Jacob Trouba's contract. Fair enough. Number six is Nikita Zaitsev. No quarrel there. Horrible contract.
The only thing that's notable on that is Nikita Zaitsev has only 4 years left on his deal, and this model very heavily is waiting. This is looking at the worst contracts over the remaining life of the deal. So it's not which one's bad this year, it's how much. And he's only, and I put that in quotes, but he's only got 4 years left and only $4.5 million. So this is by far, I'm pretty sure, the smallest contract that's anywhere near this list, and it's still easily in the top 10. It just goes to show you how bad
Nikita Zaitsev is.
Yeah, it is. It's a bad contract. It was a bad contract when the Leafs signed it. It was a bad contract when the Senators went and acquired it. They thought maybe they could, you know, DJ Smith thought he could get something out of this guy. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. It's a bad deal. Now, it's the Senators. You got to hit the cap floor somehow, so maybe it's not as damaging as it would be for other teams, but mm-hmm. Oof.
Okay. Next up on Dom's hit list is a contract that really came into sharp focus in this offseason. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the fifth worst contract. No quarrel there. I think the big winners this offseason were the teams that didn't trade for this guy.
That's I would love to right. know what was going on behind the scenes there. Like, did that not happen because the Coyotes just couldn't get anyone to make a significant offer, or was there actually a bidding war? Did the Coyotes try to squeeze a little too much? Like,
yeah, my understanding was that they kind of they did the thing that Buffalo does, where it's like, yeah, this contract is bad for Rasmus Ristolainen, and this contract is bad. And, you know, the player's not even close to being worth it. But we are going to ask for 9 first-round picks and 7 grade A prospects to acquire him. Because, you know, he has a reputation from 8 years ago that he's good. So,
And even that he's been a good defenseman. Maybe even still is a good defenseman. But this is, like, players in big markets tend to get overrated. Players in small markets tend to get underrated. But every now and then, a player in a really small market gets overrated because we all have that collective guilt and we're like, oh man, we haven't.
He's the most underrated player in the league.
Yeah, I don't know anyone on the Coyotes. I better pick their best player and just decide that he's an elite. You know, oh, if this guy played in Toronto, probably pretty good for him that he didn't.
He's a real Trevor Linden. Okay. So,
I completely. Canucks fans, that was Greg.
You know what? I'll stand by Greg on this one.
Okay, that's Greg and Ryan.
Either of us.
Look, I'll just say this. I find it hilarious that, you know, I've seen sort of these Canucks Mount Rushmore type conversations happening recently, and it's like, obviously the Sedins, obviously Burry. Should we put Elias Pettersson on there? Roberto Luongo. And then you'll see, like, Trevor Linden on the list, and, like, there'll be people who be like, well, you obviously would put Trevor Linden on there instead of Marcus Naslund. I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah, right.
But it's because looking at it as, like, from a fan's perspective of what players did I enjoy watching the most, and generated the most points or whatever like that.
I mean, but again, like, growing up, I didn't have all the access in the world to watching Canucks games. So there was a certain mystique to Trevor Linden for me. of being like, wow, he's their Messier kind of thing. Like he's, you know, he was like their king shit player. That mean outside of Bure. But yeah, I mean, come on. Number four is a great pick. Ryan Johansson.
Terrible contract.
Dom says he's now being rated closer to a strong third line center. I don't know if I'd go there. But certainly not a player that is worth $8 million times 5 years at this point in his career.
Every time I think about that contract, I'm just like, what the fuck? Like,
well, I know what the fuck. What the fuck is that they – that was at a time, I believe, where they were having a lot of trouble finding a top-line center.
Correct. And then they traded Seth Jones for him because he was coming off like a 30-goal season or something like that in Columbus.
And then he clicked with Arvidsson and Forsberg. I think that contract does not predate that line.
He was traded in the middle of a season, finished that year, played I think one more full season, and then they gave him the contract. But again, they had just traded a young Norris caliber defenseman for this guy. You've got to give him the big contract. Like we saw it with Justin Falk. We saw it with Jacob Trouba. Ryan Johansson, to some extent, it was a little bit delayed. And there's one more coming up on this list that fits into this category too. If you're an NHL player and you want to get paid more than you're worth, get traded.
Yeah,
to absolutely. A new team that gives up a lot for you right around the time you need a new deal, and you will cash in big because GMs are sitting there going, I mean, how do you even negotiate somebody to take a reasonable deal? It's like you just gave up picks, prospects, star players for this guy. And now you're going to tell me you don't think he's good? I know he's good. I'm his agent. I want you to max out the offer, and you're probably going to do it.
Is the player you're referring to the next one on this list, Sean? Number three, Jeff Skinner of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if Jeff Skinner has the third worst contract, you can only imagine who the top two are. This was a horrible contract for the minute the fucking pen hit the paper. And full no move also. What?
So I think we talked about it on a mailbag recently. But like Jeff Skinner is a guy where you can't figure out his career. You just can't. Like every third year he has 30 goals, and then one of those 2 years he has like 21, and you're like, ah, well, you know, maybe it's an off year. And then he has like six, and he can't stay healthy. Right. And so like he's having a great year. Like this is one of the ones where I kind of get it, because you kind of talk yourself into, well, Jack Eichel is what unlocked his real potential. You know, like obviously, I think the contract is bad at this point, but like at the time, you were like, well, look, if he and Jack Eichel have this kind of chemistry, Jack Eichel's not going anywhere. And like he and Jack Eichel have this kind of chemistry, then, you know, why would that all go away in 1 year? And it did. So, like, I get where Buffalo was coming from. It, again, obviously, I think the contract is bad now. But, like, at the time, there was a certain kind of a logic to it that is tough to explain today.
For sure. No, I get it. And Dom, in his positive value probability rating, doesn't factor in no moves and things like that. But again, like the idea that you handed Skinner this amount of money and full protection is fucking bonkers.
It's not great.
It is fucking bonkers. Number two is Mark Edward Vlasic. And again, like as you said, Lambert, and to summarize what you said, context is king. There was a time when this was not a bad contract at all.
He just hit a fucking wall at 100 miles an hour in his career. Yeah. That's it.
This is one of those deals where the lesson here is not, unlike with some of these other guys, this player wasn't good. The lesson here is don't give eight-year extensions to your defensemen who are going to be mostly in their 30s for that. Because if you do, basically when you're looking at the risk-reward, the reward is he might live up to the deal, maybe even surpass it by a bit. And the risk is it could be catastrophic if it doesn't work.
And now,
that's what this one looks like.
And especially with a defensive defenseman, like, you're really gambling and aren't likely to get the positive in the end just because, you know, like, a defensive defenseman, by definition, does not drive offense, and offense is more valuable than defense.
Right. And again, like, as you said, as we said, it wasn't always as atrociously bad as it is now. But I will say that I think it is an example of paying for past performance, though. I mean, the Sharks made the Stanley Cup final in, what, 2016?
Yep.
They give him this 8-year contract a year later, July 1st, 2017. And again, no move through 2023. Cap hit's not – I mean, it's not – it was 9.33% of the cap. It's a contract that went bad, I think.
Yeah, but you could have seen it was going to go bad because of his age and his style of play.
But I also think that, like, this was clearly a deal that they make thinking they were going to get a few more kicks at the can.
Oh, absolutely, that's true. And they were like, well, if you know, we win a cup, then who gives a shit? But –
right.
I forgot they were the San Jose Sharks, so.
That is exactly correct. If they thought, if we win a cup, who gives a shit? That's very true. Speaking of paying for past performance, number one, Drew Doughty. $11 million a season over 7 years. And so he's number one. And we were talking off air, Ryan, that it is not exactly a bold decision to put Drew Doughty at the top of this list. Tell me why.
Well, because you just said he makes $11 million for another 7 years. He was bad, like bad last year. Not like kind of bad, not bad for a number one defenseman. Like, he wasn't close to what you would want even like a middle pair guy to be, I think. And they paid him $11 million. The other thing, obviously, again, he's going to be 31 in December. So, like, he's about a month away from being 31 years old, and he has 7 years left on this deal. And so if he's bad at 29 and 30, you know, the odds that he's going to be good are in a team that is plainly rebuilding, like, it's not going to fucking happen. So, and, you know, again, full no move. He's not going anywhere, probably for the entirety of this deal. And so, you know, what do you say about it other than it's the worst deal in the NHL?
Yeah, but here's
not much, then.
Here's, I guess, the only thing you would say with the Drew Doughty deal, and this doesn't get factored in with Dom's calculations. This is the one everyone remembers. Drew Doughty basically fired his agent and did it on his own.
That's true.
And,
yes,
and you know, which doesn't. That doesn't reflect great on the Kings. You get taken to the cleaners by somebody who's doing the deal on their own, but. Year one, which was the season we just finished, $11 million, mostly signing bonuses. The next 3 years, a little bit of signing bonuses. And then the last 4 years of this deal, it's straight salary. No signing bonuses, at least according to Cap Friendly. The no move does get flipped into a modified no trade. Like, there's ways out of this deal. I remember when this got signed and Drew Doughty was still good when it was signed. And some people went, yeah, that's the new, sets the new price for elite defensemen. A lot of people went, oh man, that's going to be really easy to buy that contract out if it goes bad. And that's maybe the one thing that, I mean, easy still means you're taking a big cap hit and all the other stuff that goes with the buyout. But there is at least more of an escape hatch on this deal than some of the other ones on the list.
Mm-hmm. There you go. One thing to keep in mind, though, that we haven't really talked about with Doughty was like somebody else probably gives him this contract, right?
Yeah, let him. Fucking let him.
Not only does the Kings, if it's 2018, because I think he signed in 2018 the deal, he still had 1 year left on his old deal.
Yes.
If you trade him in 2018, you're going to get a ton. There would be
a Kings ransom, if you will,
lining up. Yes, there'd be teams lining up to give you all sorts of assets for Drew Doughty and then give him this same contract, probably even a little bit more because they just traded for him. Like we said, that would nudge his perceived value up. So, I mean, and now if you do that, everybody flips out and says, how do you treat your franchise player like that? This guy got you two cups. He's one of your most, your fans are protesting outside of your arena and all that stuff. So easy enough to say in hindsight, but whew, that, there was a window there.
When
I'm not now, saying I would have had the guts to do it, but...
When you say the fans are protesting outside the arena, is that because they're counting legally cast votes inside?
They want you to start and stop counting the years on Drew Doughty's contract at the same time.
Well, all right. It's fair to say that on that one, the Kings got cream. Speaking of cream, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Hawthorne. Now, what is Hawthorne? You're saying to
yourself. That's not a good one.
Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell our best. Now, here's what's fun about Hawthorne. You go to hawthorne.co. It's not simply just a big website with a bunch of different creams and products for you know your personal care that's just listed there. They tailor it to you because you're going to take a quiz. Now, as somebody who does spend a good portion of the day doing BuzzFeed quizzes, I can tell you, I love a good quiz. The quiz will let them know exactly what kind of guy you are. It's questions like, what's your favorite drink? How do you like to spend a night out? Do you smoke? And you take the quiz, and then what you get is a personalized self-care routine to your likes and dislikes, to your lifestyle. It kind of just spits it out and says, here's the stuff that you need to look and feel your best. So go take the quiz. It's as easy as that. It's Hawthorne, Hawthorne. .co, not .com, .co. And you can get 10% off your first purchase with the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P. Highly recommend these products. I got a few of the facial products. They're really good. Courtesy of the quiz, they figured out what I like, and I do dig it. Because as you know, I am at an advanced age, guys, and I need to put cream on my face to keep this cherubic glow. Cherubic?
There you go. You got it. Second try.
Thanks. Hawthorne.co, promo code SOUP. That's Hawthorne.co, promo code SOUP, 10% off your first purchase. Go take the quiz. No fuss, no muss. It's a real fun thing to do and kind of get a sense of what you might need in your life for self-care. Hawthorne.co, promo code SOUP. If you like the stuff, you get 10% off your order. Real quick before we get into some other stuff, Ryan, on the recent newsletter on the Puck Soup Patreon, you covered teams that are facing a cap crunch due to their restricted free agents that are still out there. I covered it a little bit in the column today as well. The Islanders are the ones that I think a lot of us are focused on because they've got to scare up some money from Matt Barzal. The assumption being that they could use a buyout in the next 48 hours or 24 hours or whatever it is to help with their cap situation. They have just over $3 million, I think, in cap space. But this is Lou Lamoriello we're talking about, so any possibility is possible.
Yeah,
as far as how they're going to open. Yeah, all options are on the table. They could put Leo Komarov and Johnny Boychuk on a Mars colony, and the NHL would probably allow it to get their money off the cap. But what do you think as far as teams that are faced? I mean, obviously the two that a lot of people focus on are the Islanders and the Lightning.
Yeah, well, so what's crazy is I just went to Cap Friendly to look at something or other over the weekend, and 9 teams right now are over the salary cap. Wow. The Islanders could soon join them. Tampa could soon join them. I think there's one or two other teams where it's like, you know what, if they sign one or two outstanding RFAs, they might also end up over the cap. And so we're talking about like a third of the league that is not just like spending a lot of money over the salary cap and will have to clear like roster space and money. And what's interesting is, of course, that it's a flat cap league this year, and many teams are like, oh, we don't want to spend anywhere near the cap because we're not going to have like fans in the building and stuff like that.
Right.
And so the question becomes, well, who's taking all these bad contracts on? Like, I you know, when I made the joke about the observation that the Islanders have like $4 million to give to Matt Barzal, a bunch of people were like, well, you know, here comes Steve Yzerman and he's going to take a bad contract or two and get a first round pick. And it's like, Maybe, but also, like, the Red Wings roster is pretty much full, and you can say that a lot about a lot of teams that, you know, do have cap space right now. They would need to have both the appetite and the roster space to take on a bad contract from, again, one of 11 teams. And I just really, I'm not sure where all this money's coming from for a lot of teams. So there's another 11 or 12 teams that are within like $5 million of the cap. And it's like, okay, well, somebody's got to take on this bad money, but who's going to do it? I really don't know.
Yeah. What do you think, Sean?
I mean, there's a lot of teams that are in tough, and we still don't really know how that's going to play out. I think that this reinforces the idea that if you were a team with cap space, waiting was probably a pretty good call, because there's going to be a ton of bargains, and there's going to be teams that, in theory, are going to get increasingly desperate. And I say in theory, because who knows? And we might see guys mysteriously going on long-term injured reserve. We still could see, as part of a plan for next year, some sort of cap relief baked in somewhere. I mean, it would have to be negotiated with the players, but you know, who knows? I don't think normally things like compliance buyouts are actually good for players, at least financially, because they get bought out, they get their money, and they go somewhere else and get enough money to make up the difference. But I don't think it would be right now. So, but there's still ways to work this. The NHL is not going to go into a season with 10 teams over the cap and no way to get out. So this will either work itself out through the teams themselves, or the league will have to step in and do something, because it doesn't. If it gets to a point where teams like Tampa have to, like, just drop good players off the roster because of this cap, and that's happening league-wide, that's not good for the league. That's not what they want coming back here. So it'll get worked out. I just have no idea how.
Yeah, that's what's interesting is, you know, I think that they're going to have to go way outside the box with it, kind of just because, again, like, teams are either going to not want to spend money or won't be in a position to spend money even if they could, so or even if they wanted to. So, yeah, there's just going to have to be a solution that, like, I feel like just nobody's thinking of right now, maybe at, like, a league-wide level, just because you can't. You can't do it any other way. And by the way, one of those teams that you would have thought, oh, they want to be like a real bargain team this year. The Arizona Coyotes have the highest cap commitment in the league now.
That's the sins of the former GM right there.
Oh, sure. But, yeah. And got the hell out of Dodge. Good move by him. You know, but.
No, that's a good point. I mean, again, they're going to have to be like creative. You know, I fully expect Lou Lamoriello to make, you know, Josh Bailey and Andrew Ladd emergency backup goalies that also happen to play forward or some shit, like some cap reach around. But teams are going to have to be creative. Speaking of creative, this isn't an ad read, by the way. Speaking of creative, Ryan, I understand that you have cooked up a couple more. Name Pat Falloon episode categories.
Well, no, these are just ones that have been cooking for the last little while, and I just want to get them out of my spreadsheet.
So, is this a full fledged name Pat Falloon, or is this more like B sides?
Where these are categories that we have not. We've heard about but have not touched yet.
But what I'm saying is that are Sean and I about to enter Thunderdome here and play a game?
Yes.
Or is it more of an informal
Hatfalloon session? You're asking questions about just whether the game's going to be played. It's literally unbelievable. But yeah, so because these are just kind of leftovers from last time. We're gonna go best 3 out of 5.
Listen,
because I have 5 left.
I know that people want to believe that it's not a bit. I genuinely did not know, and I'm just asking. It's never a bit. I just have a lot of questions.
And this guy was like, remember earlier, listeners, when this guy was like, "Am I smart enough to con the entire NHL?"
Okay.
All right, let's go.
Are we going to get the results afterwards, or do we have to wait a few days? And
yeah, no. You know what? I think we're going to get this this pretty quickly. But yeah,
when I get to three answers, Ryan, just say okay. I've seen enough.
I'm calling it. Yeah. We, like I said, these are five categories that we have talked about on the show before. And I also have like 10 categories that listeners have suggested, but we'll clear out the ones I came up with first. All right. And so
clear out your system. So this is a bit of an enema, if you will, for Name Pat Falloon.
I won't, but we'll we'll go. So this one is who goes first? First of all, I guess that's the important question to ask to begin.
Sean clearly goes first. He seems to win all of these.
Okay, Sean it is. Sean,
don't know about that, but okay.
You get to pick from looks like Mete's Back on the Menu, and that's guys whose names sound like food.
Mm. Okay. Oh, that's such a good... We didn't pick that category first time through?
Nope.
Holy shit.
I don't think so. I have three... Well, let me put it this way. I have three names locked in for it.
Yeah, I think we did guys whose names sound like countries last time.
We did do that, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we have They Don't Make Them Like That Anymore, and these are great players who were drafted in rounds that don't exist in the draft anymore. Then there's They're Great Late, and that is players who have multiple overtime goals in their NHL careers. Mm-hmm. So pick one of those three.
Multiple overtime, as in more than once scored... In double
more than
overtime,
once scored a second, third, fourth overtime goal. Yes.
Okay. I want to do the food one. That one
food
sounds
one
fun.
It is
so.
A, B, or C.
Food one. It is
A.
Okay. A. And I clicked on the wrong guy's name. Okay. Sean.
Oh boy.
How many clues do you think
right,
you can get?
Yes. Let's do six.
Six. Okay. So six would give you. His amateur team, his Oof. Height and weight, his draft position, the team that drafted him, the years he played in the NHL, and his career point total. Greg, do you want to shave any of those off?
The years he played in the NHL and his point total. So I would shave off point total if I wanted one more.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Let's. I'll take it down to five.
Five. Sean, do you want to go lower than that?
Yeah, I'll go down to four.
Okay.
Oh.
So that's amateur team, size, draft spot, and draft team.
See, now I'm gonna. I can't get rid of draft team. So go ahead and name him, Sean.
Okay, Sean. This guy's amateur team. Was Jokerit Helsinki. He is a 6 foot tall, 194 pound player. He was drafted in the fourth round, 69th overall, by the Edmonton Oilers in the 1980 entry draft.
Oh, for God's sakes.
That would be, I'm assuming that's Yari Curry.
That's correct. Yes, it's Yari Curry.
Come on.
You had that, Greg? Yeah, okay. That's.
Yeah, I had that. Yeah. Finnish guy drafted in 1980 by the Oilers. I might have had a
could
fucking
been,
beat on
could
that.
Could have been Esatikinen. You know, we've all.
Right.
You know,
we all had a big
good,
old
good order
plate
of Tikkanen
every Thanksgiving. Yeah. Yeah,
Tikkanen masala. Is that something?
Tikkanen masala. Yeah.
All right, Greg. You get to pick. 8-bit characters, and that's guys whose names are the same as people from Nintendo games.
8-bit characters.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. A, B, or C?
I'll take C.
C it is. Okay. How many clues do you think you need?
Seven.
Seven. So that would give you... all of the six we already mentioned, and also what country he is from.
Mm. Go six.
Okay. Greg?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to expedite this. I'm going to go zero.
Ooh, All right.
Zero.
Wow. Okay.
Sean, you can go. If you think you know who this player is, you can go negative one.
No, I do not.
I'm going to shoot. I'm going to shoot my shot here. Can I name? I'm going to shoot my shot here. Link Gates.
No, it was not. Sean, let me give you five here.
All right.
Okay.
Yep.
His amateur team was the Saskatoon Blades. He is 6'4", 197 pounds. He was drafted third overall in the 2019 entry draft by Chicago.
Fuck you.
Fuck me.
Kirby. How do you not pick Link? Kirby Doc.
The Kirby games suck.
He didn't say they're good Nintendo characters. Yeah.
Was Link Gates one of the three that you one of the three categories?
Of course it was.
Yes.
I just picked wrong.
The other guy's Mario Tremblay.
I was going to say I was looking for Mario. I was like I was locked in on Mario Tremblay or Mario Marwa. I knew you weren't going to go Lemieux.
That's right. But, I did not go Lemieux.
Yeah.
All right. So Sean is now up 2-0 on this game. So this could be a quick one.
Yeah. It could be a quick one. Okay.
Folks, you got to shoot your shot. Remember how that one guy went to prom with Margot Robbie or whatever?
No, I don't.
Shoot your shot.
Okay. So we have the guys who were drafted outside of the seven rounds that are present today. We have the guys who have multiple overtime goals. Or we have guys who went to UMass Lowell. And that was because I had also done a category where all the players had played for both the Leafs and the Devils, and so I needed to get some representation as well.
And that one somehow didn't get picked. That's incredible.
Well, again, these are all players you have 100% heard of and who have had, I would say, illustrious NHL careers to some level or another.
I want the first one, the draft, the late draft pick.
Okay.
Who among us couldn't have seen that coming?
Yeah.
Sean, like, A, B, or C?
I feel like I had a strategy last time we played this, but I think, I don't know, I picked A last time and it worked. Let's go A again.
A it is.
Loyalty.
Okay. How many clues do you need?
Let's go six.
Let's go with six. Okay, six is everything up to career points and or save percentage, depending on whether this player is a goalie.
It's an interesting caveat that we haven't heard in other categories. I'll go five.
Four.
That's all the draft details, amateur team, and size.
Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Okay.
Okay, this player's amateur team, if I'm not much mistaken, was, yep, I'm right, the Harvard Crimson. The Harvard Crimson. He's 5'10". He, 185 pounds. He was drafted in the eighth round, 166th overall, by the Boston Bruins in the 1984 entry draft.
Oh, boy.
Is it 84?
84, yep. Bruins, eighth round. Regular sized guy.
Went to Harvard.
I know there can't be that many Harvard guys, but.
I think you'd be surprised.
Regular Joe.
Yeah. No, you know what? I don't know.
I guess I'll make a guess then, yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
Yep.
Is it Ted Donato?
No, it's Don Sweeney, but you're very close.
Okay.
When was Ted Donato drafted?
It was probably a little bit later than that, but...
87 entry draft, yeah. And he was a fifth-round pick as well.
I got to be honest, man. I was really had my fingers crossed you were going to come in with like a very small size and I could go Theo Fleury, because
other than that... Sure.
All right. What are my categories?
They're great late, which is multiple overtime goals, or UMass Lowell players.
You know what? I'll throw you a fucking bone and do the UMass one.
A, B, or C? It's not UMass. UMass is in Amherst. A, B, or C, Greg?
I'm already put off by your combativeness. B.
B it is. Okay. Okay. Let's see here. Oh, I fucked this up the whole time. I forgot to say. This player is 50 years old currently. He played 606 NHL games, and the last team he played for was the Tampa Bay Lightning. I completely forgot about that part of the game. So I apologize.
I mean, it is important, but, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like Kirby Doc, when I said, oh, this kid's 20 years old, you would have been like, oh, well, it's only one guy, I guess. But yeah, anyway, I fucked that up real bad. I apologize to all
of
you.
And this person is 50, you said?
50, that's correct.
I mean, I guess I'll take six.
Six, okay.
I'll go five.
Five.
So if I say four, what do I get again?
You get draft team, draft spot, size, and amateur team.
I'll go four.
Yeah, go ahead. Name Pat Falloon.
Well, Greg, bad news. This player is undrafted, so there go two of your clues, but it might help. He's 6'1", 170 pounds, and his amateur team, the UMass Lowell Riverhawks.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
50 years old. Played 606 games. Last played for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right. I have a very limited knowledge of who played at UMass Lowell. And what I do know, though, is I know a couple of goalies that did. And the 600 game thing might be this guy. I don't remember if he played for the Lightning, to be honest with you. But if he did, it probably was towards the end. Is it Dwayne Rollison?
It is Dwayne Rollison. That's right.
Oh, good.
Shit. The games gave it away.
Yeah.
That did suggest goaltender.
I do remember him playing for Tampa Bay.
I don't remember.
Year they went to the Eastern Conference Final against the Bruins. He was their goalie. They had traded for him.
The only reason I know this is because I did a feature on Hellebuyck that also talked about Rollison and talked about Carter Hutton was also.
Carter Hutton, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember him playing for the Lightning, but you could have told me he ended his career with literally any team.
Yeah.
Including sure. Vegas. I mean, and I would have been like, yep.
He pretty much ended his career in Edmonton, right? Like, I mean, never to be heard from again. But
well, he played 50 games for the Islanders the next season after he left Edmonton, and then played 40 for Tampa in 11-12. So that's the crazy part. The reason that was a little tricky, I thought, was because he's 50, but he only retired 8 years ago.
Yeah. Well, when he played for Edmonton, he was like in his late 30s.
Yes,
right?
That's correct. Yeah, but so he retired at 42 years old, which is an uncommon thing. So the last
look
one,
at this. The rally begins.
The last one. I believe it's to Greg. Greg, you get.
I think it's mine.
Yeah, I picked
that's right.
First.
You're right.
Role
right.
Category,
yeah. Okay. So you get to pick, Sean, one of three players from the multiple overtime. So A, B, or C?
A.
A it is. This player is 40 years old. He played 1,104 NHL games. The last team he played for was the Nashville Predators. How many clues do you need?
How many games?
1,104.
Okay. 1,104 games. And the last team he played for was the Nashville Predators?
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go six.
Oof. Nashville Predators. I'm trying to get in the right headspace here. Multiple overtime goals. Nashville Predators. Five.
Four.
Ah. If I go three, what do I get again?
Just where he was drafted and when, like the year and the spot, and how big he was and his amateur team.
Jesus.
You're going for the win here.
Am I?
We're tied 2-2.
Jesus Christ. All right. Hold on. Okay, so Nashville Predator, multiple overtime goals, and what's the other bio information we have?
1,104 games played, and that's it.
Okay. And he would get, like, weight and an amateur team.
He would get the draft. If you go with three, you get draft spot, size, and amateur team. He would get the team that drafted him if you have him name it.
All right, I'll have him name it.
All right, Sean, this player played for the Sudbury Wolves. He is 6'1", 216 pounds. He was drafted in the second round, 44th overall by Ottawa in 1998.
Huh. Drafted by Ottawa in 98. Played a long time, finished with Nashville, multiple overtime goals. I'm pretty sure this guy scored one of those against the Maple Leafs, which is why if I know it, I'm going to know it. Is it Mike Fisher?
It is Mike Fisher, yep. That's right.
Of course. Of course there had to be some fucking Leaf connection.
It's always the Leafs. Me in.
God damn it.
All about the Leafs.
Fucking every fucking time. It's like, oh, I have two bits of information to go on. I believe this guy had a turnover in the third period of a game back in 82 against the Leafs.
Yeah.
It works.
What do you want me to remember? Like my kids' birthdays and stuff? There's only so much room in there.
Is it Brent Sutter? Oh, it is Brent Sutter. You knew it. God damn it. Undone again. All right.
He's unbelievable at that game. As it relates only to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. And luckily, as everybody up here in Canada knows, 99% of the things that happen in the NHL relate to the Maple Leafs. So,
yeah. Right. To the point where it's a meme. All right. Show's gone on far too long for it being an off-season show. We thank you all for listening. Do patronize our sponsors. The more that you patronize our sponsors, the more of these types of shows that we'll do during the off-season. Let's just be candid on that. Cards on the table. But we'll do more fun on the Patreon, including an overrated underrated this week. Sign up for the Patreon, Puck Soup Patreon, patreon.com/PuckSoup. Tons and tons and oodles and oodles of bonus content there. Our latest bonus episode, the Chipotle for last month was, the hell was it? What did we do? We did,
five teams with no hope over the next 5 years.
With no hope. Right. Yeah. And then I got a Smashing Pumpkins article on there and, of course, Lambert's newsletter. And, you know, the Taco Bell thing will be on there soon.
Probably. One of these days, baby.
Yep. There you go. All right, boys. What else you got?
That's it for me. I'm good.
Yeah, I find my stuff on The Athletic. This week I did a ranking of every All-Canadian playoff series of the modern era. And today I have... it's kind of an annual piece where I pick the six teams I'm most confused about midway through the off season, and it's takes me some time to narrow it down because I'm a very confused guy these days.
Oh, I should also say, check out the piece that Emily and I wrote on the next season of the NHL. It's still on the ESPN NHL page, and then my column that drops every Thursday is on there too, dealing with more of those issues and some winners and losers and other shit. So do check it out. All right, to the Patreon we go. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.